You don't know the number one radio station in Bristol, Ujima 98 FM.
Ujima, 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 Ujima
98 FM.
Treasure when you treasure all that's new and true and gay.
The heart of Bristol.
Keep on moving. You're listening to Ujima 98 FM.
Massive, you know me, say boom!
And welcome back, everybody. This is Cheryl Morgan again. This is the final half hour of our programme. And for our final guest in the studio, we have an interesting family story that we're going to tell. My guest in the studio I will refer to just as Jules. I'm leaving her last name off in order to protect her family. And the reason for that will become obvious as we go through the interview, because Jules is the mother of a trans child, that is somebody who was identified as male at birth, but as she grew up, realized that she really needed to be living as a female, as a girl first, and later as an adult woman, and who has gone through all of that painful process of discovering herself and getting people to accept her as who she is. Now, this is something that I can relate to very much because I have been through that same process myself. And when I was a child at school, I remember that I didn't really even have a name for what was wrong with me. It wasn't until the April Ashley divorce hit the newspapers in about 1970 that I could describe what was going wrong. And even though I used to get sent to educational psychologists fairly regularly because I was very unhappy at school, I knew that talking about gender was simply something that wasn't done, and that, you know, it would get myself and my parents into big trouble if I ever admitted what the problem was. Now, these days, I think things have moved on a long way, but I think we've also still got a very long way to go. And I think in the course of our conversation, you'll realize just how difficult life is for young people when they do realize they have an issue with gender. So welcome to the show, Jules. And could you start by telling us how young your daughter was when you first became aware that there was a problem?
Yeah. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks very much for having me. I'm so pleased to be here. My daughter was 14 when she actually told us what the problem was. In terms of when I realized there was a problem, probably from the age of about 5, because she was very separate, let's say that. That became more apparent at school, obviously. She came home from school at about 6, telling me that she was a freak, that she didn't fit anywhere, although at the time she didn't know why she felt that way. I'd often, if I was passing the school, see her wandering around the playground on her own, which for a mum was just heartbreaking. And also, actually, teachers would contact me regularly from when she started school, really, right through her secondary school, saying they were worried about her because she would zone out in class and daydream and not be present. So we took her for all sorts of brain scans and, as you say, psychology things. And of course, they couldn't find anything wrong with her brain. So there were lots of alerts very early on. But it's one of those things that you, for some reason, you never think it's going to happen to you or your child or anybody that you know or love. And at the time, as you said, even then, 10 years ago, there wasn't so much known about this. So I just didn't recognize the signs. I just didn't until it hit us like a big tidal wave when she was 14.
So she came and told you that she felt she was a girl. How did you and your husband react to that?
Yes, that's a great question. I reacted probably like a mum does, with a big hug and a kiss, and it'll be fine. Inside, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know what this is. I don't know what to do. I feel so alone with this. My husband used to work away in the forces at the time, so I thought, oh my gosh. But the main thing as a mum was making her feel safe and that it was going to be fine and that I loved her unconditionally. It really had no bearing on my love for her. My husband, when he came home from being away, I told him what she had said, and he just cried. He cried. I cried. When she'd left the room after telling me, I sobbed my heart out and didn't sleep at all for the rest of the night. He cried. And it's been interesting, actually, to watch various families' response to the news. And I would describe it as a grieving process, to be honest with you, the definite feeling of loss without in the beginning knowing what's going to replace that person, and having no idea, you can't envisage who this person is going to be in your family. It's but also the loss of your son. And I think that's what my husband felt very deeply, the loss of his firstborn son.
I mean, it's something that I've noticed myself, and also many of my trans friends, is that in many ways it is far harder for the immediate family to come to terms with a transition than it is for friends, or indeed for strangers, because your immediate family knows you so well. They're so invested in the person that you are. Mm. And then suddenly you're having to tell them, no, that isn't me. I'm somebody else. So how sort of long did it take you to come to terms with that?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to say, in many ways it took us probably about 2 years, in our various ways of reacting to this. You know, that's what really makes me, I'm not an expert on this, but that's what really makes me think it's a grieving process. Because we did go through all of the stages of, you know, disbelief, anger, blame. Was it something I did? And everything in between, until we got to the point of acceptance at about the 2 year point. My husband and I, and my son, my younger son, cried for about 2 years. Yeah, it was tough. It was just like a bolt out of the blue. In many ways, we knew something was wrong, but we never thought it would be that. So yeah, two years to get the pronouns right, because of course she wanted to be, we'd always known her as he. For 14 years we'd known her as he and him, and by her male name, the name we'd given her at birth. And then of course she immediately wanted us to refer to her in the name that she had chosen for herself. And the truth of it is, we couldn't do it. We couldn't do it. It was too hard. It would not come off our tongues. So we had to agree an in-between sort of name until we got used to it. So it's like being way behind her drag curve for about 2 years, but we got there in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going through the same sort of thing with my mother, that it took her quite a while. Unfortunately, I was able to live with her for quite a lot of that period, so she was able to acclimatise. But other members of my family, they still get my name wrong, and you know, it hurts, obviously.
Yes.
But at the same time, you have to realise that they have this history of dealing with one person, and accepting that person as somebody else can be very difficult. I remember also that this whole thing of guilt, that I remember my mother saying to me, well, was it something I did? Is there anything, you know, could it be what I was eating when I was pregnant or anything? Because people do get these scary things. But I think you just have to accept that it's not your fault and move forward. Is that what you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, golly, yes. The guilt thing was like 2 minutes, you know, because it didn't help. It didn't help her. I was going through my own grieving process, but at the same time, I had to support her, and she was number one priority in her safety, her health. She'd already tried to kill herself previous to that, so, and I hadn't known why. With that, armed with that knowledge, especially, it was a case of just loving her, making her feel safe, dealing with my own stuff in my own time.
You mentioned a suicide attempt, and I think this week it is actual National Suicide Awareness Week, and we should let people know that the percentage of trans people who do commit suicide, who attempt suicide, who have suicidal thoughts, is massively higher than the general population. And obviously, if you're your own child that tries to kill herself, that's an incredibly difficult thing to deal with. How did
Terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's like having your heart ripped out and burnt. It's truly terrible because as a parent, the number one thing you want to do is protect your child and keep them safe. And for her or any child to decide that life is just too hard, they would rather be dead. It's not that you feel like a failure as a parent. You just feel so very helpless and so very sad. But you are right. I used to belong to a support group called Mermaids, which is a support group for children and parents, transgender children and their parents and their families. And I would say the majority of the youngsters in Mermaids have thought about suicide, attempted suicide. Mm. And not just that, to be honest with you, have been attacked and beaten up and for being who they are. So, I mean, it's whether it's suicide or somebody else attacking you, I mean, it's a tough gig. It's a really tough gig.
Sure. And the reason for that, of course, is a sense of hopelessness that you see what happens in society. You see how trans people are portrayed in the media, in the newspapers, and you think, I'm never, ever going to be accepted. I'm always going to be an outsider and hated and feared. And,
you're absolutely
and that's
right.
What drives you to think.
You're absolutely right. And actually, when she first told me, one and her dad and her brother, because her brother was only 11 at the time, one of our first thoughts was, life is going to be hard. Life is going to be so hard. And she was saying to me, I'm never going to have a relationship. This was as a 14-year-old. Nobody's ever going to want me. Nobody's ever going to love me. So that was in her thinking too, because of, you know, how we see this portrayed in the media.
I guess having sort of got it into your head that this wasn't something that was going to go away, you need to get help for your daughter. So presumably your first port of call would be your local GP, yes?
Yes, it was. Absolutely, it was. So, yes, I went to see my GP, and he was flummoxed, really. He just laughed and said he'll grow out of
it. That's terrible.
Well, it's just lack of education. You know, it's just lack of education. I knew nothing. He knew nothing. So I went away thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? Because you only access anything through your GP. So I went to the library and found that there was one book on the subject, which was a clinical book, which really didn't help me much. Then I found Mermaids on the internet, thank goodness, where I did lots of research. I printed off a load of stuff from the internet, went back to the GP and said, this is what I found and you need to read it, please. And there is a clinic for children with gender challenges, and you need to refer us there, please. So to be fair, he did. He didn't really understand, but he did what I asked him to do. So that was good.
And this presumably is the Tavistock Clinic in London.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
So the doctor refers you to the Tavistock. What then is the process?
Well, he didn't follow the right process, unfortunately, because, as I say, he didn't really know what he was doing as much as I didn't. So it's a long old story that there's just so much delay in this system for these children. Because it took them weeks to write back, but basically they said that she had to be referred by a psychiatrist. So the doctor then referred her to the local CAMS team. But there was a 2-year waiting list to see a member of the CAMS team.
2 years is forever when you're 14.
2 years is forever when you're 14 and your body is changing at a rate that is driving you up. My daughter thought she was going mad. She actually said, I thought I was going crazy because it was so painful and distressing. So, as any other mum would do, I made a nuisance of myself with the CAMS team, and I rang them every day, sometimes twice a day, to say, my daughter won't be here in 2 years. She will be dead if you don't help her. So I think it took 3 months before somebody got so fed up with me, they slotted me in at 6 o'clock on a Friday to see the psychiatrist there. So, yeah, it was hard work.
And did the psychiatrist know what they were talking about?
No. But to be fair, she became my daughter's champion because she could see from the get-go the pain and distress that she was in. So she referred her straight away to the Tavistock, and then she supported her until she was 18. She was fantastic. She was the best clinician that we had the privilege to work with. So then she got referred. She was referred to the Tavistock, and then guess what? There was a 2-year waiting list there as well. So I did the same thing.
I guess it's the only clinic in the country, and if there are a lot of trans children, then they've got a big waiting list.
It is, and the waiting list is getting longer and longer and longer every year as more and more children are saying how they feel, because the truth about this condition is it's part of the human condition. It's just part of who we are as human beings, and more children are feeling able to say that this is how they feel. So we referred to the Tavistock, and I did the same thing, rang them every day, twice a day, saying my child will be dead if you don't help her. So that took 5 months before they got fed up enough to see me and my daughter. And then the long process began, but it was very long, very long.
We should talk a little bit about the actual medical procedure, because when this gets covered in the newspapers, people talk about children getting given sex change pills. Now, that's really not accurate. The pills that people are given are what they call puberty blockers. And what they do is that they delay the effects of puberty. So for a young trans girl, they effectively prevent the voice from deepening. They prevent you from starting to grow facial hair and body hair, so that when you're older and you're legally able to make a decision as to what you want to do with your life, you can either come off the pills and continue to develop normally as a boy, or you can say, no, I want to go for full medical transition. And that's when the real changes to the body take place.
It's true. And the thing about it's this sort of treatment is that when children have something called precocious puberty, for instance, you know, which can start very, very young, you know, in, I've heard, I don't know, 7 or 8, something like that. They are given drugs to stop their puberty happening so young, because of course it's not a good thing. So, I mean, it's not, this isn't something unknown, this treatment. But yes, the aim is to prevent puberty from going full-blown puberty. Sadly for my daughter, by the time she accessed this treatment, she was 17, so her puberty was over, so she had the full gamut of facial hair, you know, body hair. We spent an absolute fortune to have her whole body and face lasered.
Wow. Yeah, we did. I remember going through all that sort of stuff myself, and it is very expensive, but I guess then the next stage is, what do you do about school? If she's 17 and she's transitioning to female, are you going to go back to school as a girl?
Yeah, you certainly are.
That's brave.
Yeah, it was. She is a very courageous, extraordinary young woman, and I feel absolutely blessed that she's in my life. But 14 was the age she told me. 14 was the age that the school found out. We weren't quite ready to tell them, but on another occasion she tried to hang herself when she was 15, I think, and it happened to be the day that she was due to do a modular maths exam. So the school rang up shouting at me saying, get this person to school, and I said, she's just tried to hang herself, or he has just tried to hang himself at the time. And that's when it all hit the fan, and even though I couldn't articulate it myself, I almost wasn't ready yet, because I didn't understand it. I had to tell the school. And the school was amazing. They were amazing. An exemplar school, I would say. Bearing in mind this was 10 years ago. This was, you know, long before all these amazing programs were on the television. They helped her at school to make the change. They, with my help, with the little I knew at the time, they educated the children, and the children were wonderful. It's something I've learned, is that if children understand something, they are fine with it. They do not have a problem with it. So they supported her and they rallied around her. So she, in effect, left, after her GCSEs, with her male name, because she legally changed her name when she was 16. And then she went back to the same school to sixth form as who she is now, and carried on.
Right. It must be very difficult for schools, because I presume that teachers get no training at all for anything like this.
No, they don't, which has become really apparent over the last few months, where because of my connections with mermaids, people have been going to mermaids. Schools in Bristol and colleges in Bristol have been going to mermaids asking for help because they say that they have no idea how to help these children. And, you know, there's children as young as 5 at school who are unhappy in their gender and need support. But to give support, the teachers in the schools have to understand how to give that support, the best way to give that support. So in fact, one of the things I'm doing now is working with schools to educate the staff, to help them educate the pupils, even the parents, because obviously, as much as teachers don't understand and children don't understand until it's explained to them, neither do the other parents. And everybody's afraid of what they don't understand, especially something like this. This is quite a big deal. And so when, for instance, when my daughter was at school and she made this outward change, she had the most problem with parents of other children.
It is very difficult, but it's wonderful to hear that you are working with schools. And I think we should give a shout out here to the LGBT Forum, who are working in conjunction with Bristol Council on their Diversity in Schools project.
So what's next for you?
Ultimately, I have to keep my daughter safe. Mm-hmm. Because as much as she's living her life and doing her thing and happy and healthy, it amazes me there are still people who don't like the way that she is and seek to harm her.
So my final question was going to be, you know, now she's gone through all this process, she's had all the medical treatment, how is she doing?
Yeah, she's doing great. She's doing really, really well. She's I think the truth of this is it helps for her to be living with a life coach, that's me, and a career coach, because somehow by osmosis, because I don't be a life coach directly to my children because they just wouldn't have it, she's picked up so many resources that enable her to help herself when her stuff comes up. And the sadness never goes away about being in the wrong body. It never goes away, but she lives in spite of it. I think it's like any big grief you have in your life. You learn to live with it and you live in spite of it. But yes, she's doing great.
Well, that's wonderful to know. Thank you ever so much for coming and telling us your story, Jules. And my very best wishes to your daughter. I hope she has a long and very happy life.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
This is Cheryl Morgan, and you have been listening to an excerpt from the Women's Outlook show on Ujima Radio 98 FM. Women's Outlook is produced and hosted by Paulette North and is broadcast every Wednesday between noon and 2 p.m. The show is available for streaming and as a podcast from the Ujima website at www.ujimaradio.com. That's ujimaradio.com. Thank you for listening.